Mr. Sherwood, Reel 3. You were talking about this aspect of your previous, where you'd been lined up for perhaps joining the Fleet Air Arm. Could you tell us?
No, I wasn't going to the Fleet Air Arm. I opted, I think, at that stage for the Army and perhaps even at that stage for the artillery, but I'm not so sure about that. It was probably more general. But there were some of my friends who opted for the Fleet Air Arm. We were all allowed to carry on studying, but at 48 hours' notice. And whereas I was lucky and able to continue, as the war developed, getting on towards the Dunkirk period, some of the Fleet Air Arm boys were called, recalled, and they couldn't sit their finals. But I think most of them were given their degrees anyway. And in fact, when I've gone back to Bristol after the war, I've looked on the Roll of Honour and the names of people who were in the Fleet Air Arm and who were killed. To get back.
Now, what was your reception when you arrived at the camp? I mean, how did you were going in as a nothing?
Not quite. I don't think I was ever a nothing except for the first about few days, because I'd been in college at the OTC. Officers training course.
We should discuss that. Yeah. We'll do it now. What OTC experience had you had?
That was during the year at Bristol. I went on the OTC concurrently with the war starting. And I hadn't been in the OTC in London at all, but Bristol was. And I suppose that led on to even when I volunteered.
Now, what was the training you got with the OTC?
Not much, but we'd go on manoeuvres, rifle drill, bit of military thing, but basically simple marching and so on. And as they done mock manoeuvres, I remember some of them. And I remember being told off because at one point I was in charge of a few members, and I was told, right, you've got to get them over to that hill or something. So I said, right, jump. Shoulder, arm, and the officer in charge said, no way, because he said, that's brave ground. Just sort of get them over there as quickly as you can. Not on both. But of course, they were like that. Basically, it was very simple.
Had you done much weapons training of any sort?
Only with rifles. Lee-Enfield rifles. That was all. Learned quite a bit about that. But that basically, even that, was very elementary. It was done much more intensively, of course, when I went into the course.
Now, how did that? So you went in. How did they get you? Take you in? You had no. Did you wear your OTC uniform?
No, I was ordinarily. Well, I didn't have an OTC uniform. Just wore overalls. So, I was an ordinary troop, and then I was given an ordinary army uniform. But very soon after, whether a matter of days or weeks, or whatever, I think there must have been a couple of weeks. All those who had been so selected or whatever were given one single strike, or strike on one arm. And Lance Bombardier was earmarked for artillery by then, and became, in effect, a Lance Bombardier, although only with one strike on one arm, which meant that we were the people so they could see us and know what we were doing.
So this was because you were seen as a potential officer?
Yes. And in fact, I remember very vividly, even though what school was, and there was maybe a sergeant or a bombardier, something, please go for it. But he said to me, hey, you have a degree from the university. And I said, yeah. He said, oh, as if he never met anybody before he was ever going to the hospital. And I remember thinking, what's so special about that? But later, looking back on it, it's understandable why.
Do you remember being kitted out? Well, how you were kitted out? What you got?
Battle vests with all the old boots and top everything, underwear, and a whole lot. But of course, those of us who were from the more prosperous homes had better underwear than we thought from the floor. We even had pyjamas, which quite a few people had, with a four-hour shirt, in a shirt. And somehow, of course, inevitably, we somehow got to get together with one stripers and people of similar backgrounds, university, training, and we probably spend most of our time together. There was a distinction, notwithstanding. The social divisions in those days were quite marked. And we were aware of the social divisions, the way we talked, and the type of language we used, swearing, and drinking, and so on. And that went all the way through. So we weren't given special training, but I think we watched that much more carefully. And then, at a fairly early stage again, we went up to those boards.
I'll come back to that. Now, what about, how did you get on with the other recruits? The two sets, really. There's your fellow potential officers, and then there's the others.
I don't recall any particular problem. I don't recall them considering us lucky numbers or anything like that. It may have happened there, I just don't recall, or I didn't notice, or I'm sort of in denial about it. I don't think so. But my memory is we were all in it together. We slept the same way, in the same beds, we did the same marching, we ate the same food, all that sort of thing. During our social hours, we probably spent more time together, and perhaps in a different way. But I don't recall the being aware of the sharp division. We knew that there was them and there was us, but it wasn't the sort of us and them before.
Now, what would a typical, I'll sort of look into all the conditions, look at a typical day, there's no such thing really, but, and using that to look at the food and everything else and the training. On a typical day during this training period, about what time would you start?
Oh, well, probably about 7 o'clock, whatever weather. But then I used to, because where we lived in Hackney, there was no central heating. And I share a room with two brothers in the top floor, and we had to scrape the ice away from the windows to be able to look through. So it wasn't sort of very hard. I can't remember exactly hour by hour what we did, but clearly we get out, we have to shave, and then go and have breakfast.
What about breakfast? What about food? Because, I mean, you had been living according to the Jewish dietary laws, and
no.
Did the army make any sort
no,
of...
No, I don't recall that, and I don't recall asking for any. We just ate whatever we were given.
So would you eat bacon and pork?
Not knowingly. That's... typical of that, because obviously ham or something would come up in other ways, but I probably quite like to identify it as ham. And I don't recall thinking at college, when at Mortimer House here at Bristol, there was a distinction because there was another Jewish chap, and we were given, I don't know if they asked, but since we knew that our religion was Jewish, they used to, whenever there was meat on the menu, we were to give an omelette or something like that separately. And I remember feeling a bit weird, everybody else having that, and just we too be having something separate. But I don't remember, I don't recall other people making fun of us or being nasty. I may have been protected, but I don't recall.
But there was no question of special provision in the army?
No. There wasn't, no special provision. It wasn't. I don't recall it being asked for or offered. It just didn't arise. On our identity thing, it had the number, army number, which I remember, I think that, and had the letter J, Jewish. That was the only difference, otherwise it was all normal.
In view of the nature of the regime you were fighting, were you worried by this J, which seems a bit silly?
I don't recall being particularly frightened. But as far as being Jewish is concerned, I do recall that I didn't make it obvious right away. I didn't deny that I was Jewish, but it wasn't a case of going in every morning, I'm Jewish, or anything like that. And several times, I think I must confess, that when there was always another way, there was an undercurrent of, call it anti-Semitism. It was almost just the institution or sort of thing that some of the old Jews Jewish or something like that. And I wouldn't react and say, what do you mean he's also Jewish? You know, we're normal or anything like that. I wasn't aggressively defensive. I just didn't actively make sure everybody knew I was Jewish. Also, I didn't actively avoid, deny being Jewish. And often just people rise.
Now, what about training? If we look at, we're looking at a typical day now, in the morning, perhaps you'd, would you have PT? I mean,
oh, yes. Did a lot of physical training, a lot. But again, look back, fortunately, I think it was the days before they put in the very intensive obstacle courses. And I remember often, I remember thinking back and all of a sudden, I didn't have to do those. But we did a lot of route marches, a lot of physical training, and I was in pretty good physical trim. I had played quite a bit of football before, and as I say, at school, I was really interested in gymnastics and activities. It, I didn't find it madly hard. We come back to the washed out, of course, the usual thing, but I don't recall being, oh, I just fell, I fell, I fell. It was hard, but I don't recall feeling, oh, this is that. Wrong, you know, people shouldn't be forced to do this.
How far did you go on a route march? Or?
Oh, I can't remember the mileage, but I suppose 10 miles would be the thing. Our feet were in terrible condition, of course, blisters all over, and the boots were terribly hard and terribly sore, but we just had to live through it. And you couldn't say, oh, I can't put boots on, you had to put your boots on. They were painful and sore, but very gradually it got harder and harder, and then you didn't make it that much. I didn't like group marches. I didn't like any intensive physical training I had to do, but did it. I wasn't violently against it.
What about drill itself? A foot just drill.
Well,
how did you take to drill?
The way I always used to enjoy. I used to enjoy dancing, and with some similarity between dancing and foot drill and all that, keeping time and turning and reversing and all that sort of thing. So I didn't mind doing that, and I was quite happy, and I think I did it reasonably well.
Did you understand the military point of drill at the time?
No. No, often one of these sort of always got to do with fighting the war. Later on, of course, when they went to octave, then we understood a bit more about the purpose and the aim, and one then realises you can't just say, oh, by the way, would you mind moving in that direction, sort of thing, and then don't pick up that sort of thing, and automatically people would respond to that. Incidentally, this was another question that was discussed recently. It grew out of the fact, I'm just joking, but I think it's relevant. Quite relevant. There was a case recently of a woman from a state school who was refused admission to Oxford to do medicine, although she had all the qualifications, but they said, well, she lacked the sort of self-confidence that we would like to have. And it was raised all this question of elitism and so on. Although everybody should be permitted to do whatever they were capable of doing. But thinking back, the boys who came from public schools, and I didn't, and of course, once when he became an officer and had opted, well, he was involved, boys from all sorts of schools, but chiefly from universities and all public schools. Next question, somebody who had a public school upbringing or more quote, aristocratic upbringing was better qualified to be ordered. Now, I can't give that as a general rule, but maybe because they expected their orders to be carried out. They used to give orders to servants, to the scouts, to the colleagues, they used to, and automatically so expected those going to be carried out. some of us, to a certain extent, is often really surprised how people promptly carried out my order. They've got a little bit of legal training. I wonder, well, why do we need to do it that way? Or I feel like saying, oh, by the way, Sergeant, would you mind this particular fire? So I think there's a certain element of that. Good or bad is another matter.
What about weapons training? If you look at the Lee Enfield, how did they go about teaching you to be to shoot?
Well, first of all, I remember a pleasant thing. All the rifles had numbers on them, stamped on them, and your rifle. I remember the sergeant or somebody saying to you've got a bunch of rifles there. How do they use yours? And most people say, well, you look at the number. I said, well, I wonder, I can only think about one. He recognized from the grain of the wood and stuff. He said, right. And I think, I finally thought that was a very good answer. But of course, that's how you do it. Basically, the metal are identical, but the wood, the grain will be different. Probably a bit darker, or have a dark patch in the corner, and you recognize it that way. I wonder how, just put that in this. I thought it was obvious, but still. Remember that. And there was a general reference, which the essential importance of keeping it clean. Going through a 4x2 and oiling it and all that. I don't recall a very great deal of actual practice shooting live ammunition. We must have done some. And I think I was very good at that. I recall that, yes, I did fairly well myself. And also doing the weapon training, really carrying and marching and all that sort of thing, and twirling them around. I wasn't bad at that sort of thing. Also, as I mentioned earlier, I had wanted to be an engineer, and I was always interested in mechanical things, and it wasn't too difficult for me to understand the mechanism of the equipment. I don't think we went really further than the rifle.
Did you get the Bren?
It had a Bren, but I don't recall having Bren training there. See, I only spent a certain amount of time in Puri infantry training. I went off to
Looks about 3 or 4 months you were there. What about bayonet training? Did you do that?
Very little. I don't recall that we did bayonet training for bayonets. I saw you had to go off stabbing into sacks and all that. But I don't recall the I don't really recall that. At that time, I think it was a bit more gentlemanly. A year or two later, it became much tougher. But a thing I do remember about that period of the army, where it blacked down, those brains were going in London. I had to do all those sentry duty at night, 2 hours on, 4 hours off, with the guard. And I used to try to arrange to do it at dawn. It used to be very pleasant. Starting out in the dark, let's say 4 o'clock in the morning, at 5, you suddenly see the sun. And I was going to also light sort of the flames from London in the morning. And see that. And also, I remember at times going back from leave and having to walk at missed the last train or something, walk 5 miles. In the dark lanes and all that to get back to camp. But that was normal in those days. I didn't think twice about it. And just did it.
What about hand grenades? And
we're taught about them. I don't recall ever throwing a hand grenade, but I knew we were taught what to do with the trigger mechanism. But no, I don't think we actually.
Any other weapons you were introduced
to? No, we didn't have pistol training then because, of course, the basic family speaking then weren't issued with pistols until we got to off to or in the
What about gas training?
Oh, yes. There was a lot of gas training. I had to mention that because that's very special. The person in charge, Martin, whoever, was explaining how you identify everything. He would say, well, mustard gas, not like uranium. How did uranium smell? if I had a very poor sense of smell, I wouldn't know how to read it. If there's a massive heart attack, I've got to be much in getting warned about it. So I wouldn't know how geranium smells. Yes, we had gas, we had gas masks, but we always had a carry gas mask.
Did they put you through the gas chamber?
No. No, the gas chamber was like another surrounded with a non-PC, so to speak. But on that, I remember at one point when the raid was starting, we were in this shelter in the bottom of the house, and my brother-in-law, I was older, he was saying, well, how are we supposed to put our gas masks on now? I thought, well, I think so, but we wait for blackboards or something. And I remember when we were down there, we learned to identify the sound of the J-U-A-K-8 Junkers 88. There was a certain throb about it.
Now, as you're going through the day, you'd have more meals and things. What about the evening? I mean,
well, it's hard to get for ourselves. There'd be sermons, big things like that. I suppose there must be ENSA, ENSA. Anyway, the show they put on shows, people come down. But again, as I say, there's only 3 months.
Would you go out to the town if there is a...
Yes, I would come back to town quite frequently. Whenever I've been.
Oh, that's London, sorry. But would you go out locally? Or was there anywhere to go? Did you drink? I mean...
Now, that's an interesting question. I was never a big drinker. Alcohol never played a big part in our lives. When we had parties, we made it down. Chiefly soft drinks, maybe an old beer or maybe added beer. But we, as I said, we used to pool our money, see how much we had, how much we could spend on buying things. And beer was a very small part of it. I was introduced to alcohol drinking in the army and had some very, unpleasant experiences. And I, in my diaries, I was quite critical about some of the very wrong things that happened at offices, particularly drinking away and men starved of alcohol and the condition to her is wrong. Anyway, I on a couple of occasions I got terrible drunk just later on.
Right, okay, but you didn't drink much as a trainee. And what about preparing for kit inspections or kit inspections,
oh, yes.
Was that a big thing?
Precise, blankets had to be absolutely everything, and also your own clothes and your shoes. I still hate polishing shoes, and I'm sure it's because of the army thing. Later on, I had a batman who was putting my shoes, but even now, I often leave it to my daughter. I have a thing about it. We had to have everything absolutely precise, of course. Kit laid out, had a toothbrush, everything was that. And well, we did it. I wasn't the tidiest of persons, but I did it and got through all that.
What did you think of your sergeants, the NCOs, your instructors?
I had quite a respect for them. I'd say none of them had the fortunate advantage that I have had. Study or even home life. I have respect for them and thought quite well of them. I don't know what they thought okay of me. I've never at the receiving end of anything particularly nasty. I never told off to anything wrong, doing it correctly, but no relationship with them all right. I think probably it perhaps was the first time I realised that there were people in very large numbers who had the minimal education and also minimal social advantages. I was aware previously, intellectually, though to say, I was aware because I had socialist tendencies, aware of it, but this was the first time I'd come actually direct with it and taught people when they were explaining something. Having such a small vocabulary with which to describe it, And of course, swear words came into all the time. When they couldn't think of an adjective, they go, they're bloody something or whatever.
How did you react to the swearing? Because there is a lot of swearing in the army.
I didn't like it. Largely, I didn't join in. I still had an aversion to actually saying swear words in ordinary life. When I was recording books, I had to read them. In the law, if you were in court, you were quoting what somebody said, you have to quote it word for word. Exactly, okay, you do, then the man's cold-blooded. But I've never, and I still don't, in heat, use swear words. Jokingly, I say, oh, that's the other one, that's on. Or, he's really a bastard. Because, but not in a sense of sort of swearing. And it still hurts. Children, of course, swear very much more. My children, they swear and they apologize to me because they know I don't like it. I don't know why I don't like it, because often words are neutral. Words don't, they're bad. Word can't be good or bad, it's only the way in which it's used. And I do say, I think I call the crudity of it. The inability is to find super adjectives. And the short of adjectives, they just use a swear word. And there wasn't enough of it. And at all levels, an officer's probably less. But it depended also on the origin of the officers, because the officers became very mixed.
Now, so anything else about your time at Blacktown?
Not really. It wasn't a frightful experience. There were sort of, in fact, I got through it all right. Some of it was extremely uncomfortable, particularly marching through, walking through the rain late at night, trying to get back to when I was in my knee. I never put on a charge. I was never AWOL. I wasn't a goody-goody, but I was very fond of the basic rules.
Did you have any actual artillery training?
No, not at that point. Not in Blacktown. That came when I went to Shiran, not to, because I don't opted for artillery.
Well, I think the next thing is to look at your boards before you went to Shrivenham.
Yes.
How were you selected as an officer, other than the fact you'd been identified as a potential...
Yes. That was the basic. I'd been identified, so I went through the usual course, which was interviews with various levels. I do recall them. I recall them because also my family level, and they were immigrants, and from Eastern Europe. And remember the political setup at that time, when the war started, Russia was not quite enemies, but they made a treaty with Germany. Poland were friends, but they were uninterested. And then when Germany invaded Russia became our friends again. But during the period of my interviews, it was the earlier period, which would be whatever, and it was the period when Russians were not our friends. Now, my parents, at that time, I wasn't absolutely sure whether my parents came from Poland or Russia, because that area had continually changed hands. And I used to say, well, they were Polish or Russian, depending on the latest peace treaty. Going back, I mean, several hundred years, during the various partitions of Poland. And I remember on one occasion being asked at the interview whether my parents were where they'd come from. quick thinking, it could be equally right to say Poland or Russia, or Russia, Poland, something, and I said, in Poland. And so, yes, that town, Poland, were our friends. So I didn't do it in order to deceive. It was an accurate answer, but not entirely. If I said Russian, I said, oh, are you still involved with Russia? Well, I was not. I was not involved with Poland or Russia or anything, but there was that. The family name had originally been Scheinbaum. That was a name that my grandparents and parents had, my father had, but that was changed when I was still at school, to Sherwood. It was changed because one of the relations, not so distant relations, had become cheap.